No rest for the weary for this guy. He is Mel Kiper Jr., probably the busiest guy in the country around this time of year as the NFL draft approaches. Still about 2 months away, but so much evaluation and so many mock drafts out there. Mel, we appreciate the time. How you doing?
Oh, great to be with you, Chris. Looking forward to the next couple months with a lot of draft talk and a lot of things, obviously, over the next few weeks once we get free agency will impact all these ratings and certainly all these mock drafts.
Well, Mel, this is very interesting. Now, first of all, last week came out with mock draft number 2. You had Trevor Lawrence at 1. You had the Jets moving back a little bit. But I first want to talk about Zach Wilson because it seems as if there have been other places where Wilson is starting to creep up on Trevor Lawrence. Where do you see the difference between the two? Is it a 1 and 1A or is it a 1 and a definitive 2?
It's a 1 and a definitive 3 for me. I have Justin Fields slightly ahead of Zach Wilson, but I do agree that Wilson could go at that second spot to somebody trading up. But Trevor Lawrence had 3 years. Zach Wilson had 1 year against a very soft schedule. I'm being kind there, against a weaker opponent. So he did a great job, no question about it. But if you go back and look at prior to this season, I mean, he had some ball security issues. He had some bad interceptions. He looked like anything but a first-round quarterback, and he added weight. He added strength. He got back from that shoulder surgery in 2019 to struggle a little bit, but then put it all together this year. I give him total credit. But to say he's up there with Trevor Lawrence, I think, is a major stretch. And that really happens all the time. I remember whole Rick Meyer, Drew Bledsoe debate, and you go back to, you know, all the debates that took place along the way with the first quarterback and the second quarterback. We've always had that, where they try to jump somebody ahead. But in this case, I don't think there's any doubt. Urban Meyer took that Jacksonville Jaguar job for one reason. It's because he knew he was getting Trevor Lawrence.
Mel, when you look at a guy like Wilson, you mentioned the fact that he played a cupcake schedule, and he did. How much do you take that into account when you're evaluating a quarterback prospect?
It's not the all-encompassing part of it. It's a piece, especially when you're comparing, say, Zach Wilson to a Justin Fields. Justin Fields played a tough schedule in 2019. He got his team to a chance to play Clemson, and he came up a little short on interception in the end zone, which was not his fault. He had 41 touchdowns, 3 picks. He was at 67%. And this year, interrupted by COVID, games canceled, interruption to practice schedule and all that, meeting schedule, he had 2 rough games against Indiana and Northwestern. Now, he came back, he played against Clemson, and he played tremendously well in that semifinal game, outperformed Trevor Lawrence, and I think he's worthy of still being way up there. So I think that's what you have to look at, the competition there. If you're separating players, it's not going to hurt Trey Lance all that much. He's going to go in the top 10 based on potential, not what he did. He played one game, and he wasn't impressive in that game against Central Arkansas. So that's all based on where he can be 2, 3, 4 years from now. With a guy like Mac Jones, it's about where he is now, because how much better is he going to be? You know, not having the dual threat ability that some of these other quarterbacks have. So this is a tough group to evaluate. Todd McShay and I today were on, and Todd called it brutal. A lot of these evaluations are just brutal to try to separate players who opted out from guys that played. You know, it's really going to be a rough evaluation process for a lot of these NFL teams to try to get it right.
How do they go about this? I mean, what's the best way to do it? There are going to be some pro days. There's no combine. You obviously have all the access to tape that you need, but there are those guys that haven't played enough, frankly.
Yeah, no, what they're doing, Chris, is they're battling another guy at a position. Caleb Farley didn't play at Virginia Tech. He had an outstanding 2019 season at cornerback. But then you have Patrick Surtain II, who did play. You have Devontae Smith, wide receiver, who played great. You have Jamar Chase, who did not play at LSU. Same position. So, again, you have the Gregory Rousseau, pass rusher at Miami, defensive end, had a great year in 2019. Needed to improve on some things and didn't play. And Jalen Phillips did and took his number and had a ton of sacks and did a great job at Miami. So, separating those guys, then you have Landon Dickerson, center at Alabama, injured late in the year, but he should be ready by the third, fourth game of the season. How does that deal? You have Jason Owe, Chris, who was a pass rusher you thought this year would maybe have 10 sacks. He had no sacks. He went from 5.5 sacks to no sacks, but he's going to run 4.3 at 260. He's got great length, great potential as a pass rusher. So there's a kid, Jason Owe. You're drafting him to be a pass rusher, and he didn't even have a sack this year at Penn State. That's what we're dealing with in this draft, with a lot of guys who are, I would say, boom or bust, the old cliche, but I'd say are difficult evaluations.
Mel Kiper Jr., the iconic voice, you know it. Mel, you did something I thought was very interesting in your column yesterday, and that was taking the 2020 quarterbacks and putting them in where they would slot in this year's draft. And there was that larger gap where Zach Wilson was back at like fifth and Trevor Lawrence was still up there at first. So around here, the talk is always going to be about Sam Darnold and where he would slot in this draft if he were coming out right now. In your estimation, where would that be?
It would be right behind Trevor Lawrence. I mean, I've been consistent with this all the way through, Chris. The only quarterback in this draft that would make me move away from Sam Darnold, I didn't have Sam Darnold as the top quarterback when I had Josh Allen as one of my all-time highest graded quarterbacks coming, as my top 10 to 15 highest graded quarterbacks ever. And I liked him over Sam Darnold, but I like Sam. Just because you have somebody over one or the other doesn't mean you don't like the other one. And I tend to like a lot of these quarterbacks. Some of them don't pan out. That's been the nature of the first-round quarterbacks, Chris. Some of these guys just don't live up to the potential. That's just the way it is. But in terms of ranking them, that's the key, is how do you rank them? You're going to like them, but who do you like a little more? I mean, I go back to Kansas City a few years ago. They were all set to trade up to get Paxton Lynch. They wanted Paxton Lynch. They didn't get him. Denver did. The next year, John Dorsey in Kansas City, who was a GM then, drafted Patrick Mahomes. So he made a bad evaluation on Paxton Lynch, right? The next year, he made a great evaluation of Patrick Mahomes. That's what the quarterback situation of evaluating is. It's hit or miss. So I would say Sam Darnold, to me, if I'm the Jets, I'm keeping Sam. I'm helping him, something he hasn't had. I'm not making a move to Zach Wilson and trading him, because then Zach Wilson ends up with an inferior supporting cast, and you don't know anything about Zach. And, you know, Sam's been, for what he's had to deal with, has shown, I think, some promise. And you get Deshaun Watson, I'd go after Deshaun Watson hard. But that's me. But there's no quarterback in this draft other than Trevor Lawrence would force me away from Sam Darnold.
So would Sam, what's happened with him, is it almost unfair to try to evaluate him after the 3 years that he's had because of what you're talking about? Because that's what the talk is around here. He hasn't had anything to work with.
No. I mean, you think about the offensive line, the tight end position gave him nothing, the wide receiver spot, look at that, what was going on there. Now they have Denzel Mims, who could be a really good player, and Mekhi Becton could be a really an elite left tackle. Look at the running back. So, yeah, I mean, you got just an average player. So, again, you're talking about a group of players around the quarterback. It isn't the big-time NFL-caliber players you need, at least at certain spots, have some star power around your quarterback. They don't have any. So, again, you're talking about, you know, Sam also with the mono, and then you had the shoulder. So, it's just, and he's young, and he's coming out of college, and he had, you know, he's got to ease his way in, and he's got nothing helping him. So, to me, what I would hate to do if I'm the Jets is draft a quarterback at two and lose out on Kyle Pitts, tight end, Florida, or one of the two receivers, either Devontae Smith or Ja'Marr Chase. That's helping your quarterback big time. These are three special players, the two wide receivers and the tight end. You lose all three, any one of those three guys you want, you could get by moving even down from two to four or down from two to six. In that area, you're going to get two of those three still available. So I would rather go that route. Move down, acquire picks, and get one of those three elite pass-catching entities and stay away from the quarterback. Go with Sam Darnold. See what you have there over the next few years. I understand the money situation's coming up. Deal with that. But if you take Zach Wilson, you're going to lose out on a guy who could really help that quarterback in one of those three players.
Mel, you said this week that Pitts is in a different category than any player you can remember it evaluating. Jet fans hear tight end and they think, oh God, why would we take one that high? Tell us about Kyle Pitts and what makes him so different in your eyes.
Well, I think the ability to do anything at a receiving entity type position, put him outside, inside slot, tight end, in line, he can block well enough. He's one of the, I mean, if you said to the Jet fans, would you want Travis Kelce? Would you want Darren Waller? Would you want Tony Gonzalez when he was playing? Would you want that kind of player in your offense? Yes, you would. Kyle Pitts, and the thing with Kyle Pitts is he's a tight end. He's a receiving entity, as I call him. There's nobody like him at that spot. So you're not going to find a player in the second round or another player in the first round or steal a guy in the fourth round that's going to be as good as Kyle Pitts or even close. You can find other receivers. That's why I thought for the Jets, if they move from two to four, look at Kyle Pitts maybe over the receivers, because there's a really good group of receivers that are going to go in the second and third round this year. But you're not going to find a Kyle Pitts in the second or third round. So that was my logical thought process there, Chris, as to why Kyle Pitts would make sense for the Jets if they did move off of that second spot down to the fourth spot.
Fans have wanted to see Mel, and of course it's Mel Kiper Jr. with us, ESPN's great draft analyst. Mel, fans have wanted to see potentially adding another tackle in Penei Sewell in the first round. separate fact from fiction here, Mel. Taking a tackle 2 years in a row that high to give you bookends, good idea or not?
You know, you can't have them all, Chris. You can't have the wide receiver, the tight end, and the tackle. You got to decide what do you want. I would say this: go to the highest rated players, and the highest rated players are going to be that group. Now, who do you feel is the best of that group? And you could certainly make a strong argument for every one of them. Now, the thing with Penei Sewell is he didn't play. He only had the one full year in 2019. He was hurt some in 2018. So, you look at Sewell, 1 year guy, did not play, opt out. Hey, you had no contact with those guys the entire year. So you might feel safer with a Kyle Pitts, who averaged 18 yards a catch and was a key entity for Kyle Trask there in that offense at Florida, or Devontae Smith, who had an unbelievable year, wins the Heisman Trophy. So I think Smith and Pitts, because they played, make a lot of sense, even though we know Chase is going to be really good, but he only had one great year at LSU. That was it, one great year. And we know Sewell had that one full season at Oregon. That's it. So while these two are talented, it's a very limited body of work.
Mel, when you have a guy like Deshaun Watson who could be, end up being available here, and it certainly looks like at some point they're going to have to trade him, in today's draft capital, what is he worth?
I'd say, what they're talking about, three number ones, Chris, and a player. You know, they were talking about Christian McCaffrey with Carolina and the number ones, and to get a 25-year-old quarterback who's a franchise quarterback, who's one of the top 3 to 4 or 5 quarterbacks in this league, you can make an argument strongly that he's one of these super elite quarterbacks in this league, and he didn't have anything, and he still was great. This is the thing. You come to the Jets, they're gonna have to build up the supporting cast. Well, with the Houston, he had issues. They took his best guy away in Hopkins, and he still had a phenomenal year overall. So he's dealt with that type of thing, and he would have to deal with it with the Jets while they're building, Joe Douglas, the GM, is that talent base around him. So I would have no issue. They have a surplus of picks now. They have a lot of opportunities now to go out and get players, and you could trade Sam Darnold, get something. Obviously, he would be part of that deal, so Houston would be getting Sam Darnold, and you would be obviously giving up draft choices, but they'd be getting their quarterback plus draft picks. It wouldn't necessarily maybe have to be as many, but I would go that route in a second if I could get Deshaun Watson, but there's speculation, Denver, Carolina, who knows what the Bears are going to be doing, but Denver, Carolina seem to be teams that are mentioned the most when it comes to Deshaun Watson.
With all the needs that they have, Mel, if we make the assumption that they're going to go with an offensive playmaker with the first pick, at the 23rd pick, what should the Jets be looking at?
Well, they could look corner. J.C. Horn from South Carolina, Joe Horn's son, I have going 16. Maybe he slides down that far. I went with Quiddy Pay, the defensive end from Michigan. Todd's got a mock coming out on Friday, so he'll have his opportunity there to project who the Jets would take at that 23rd spot. But I would think pass rusher, corner on defense, offensive line, wide receiver on offense. So if you think tight end, then you could look at wide receiver. What problem I had there, Chris, is I had Kadarius Toney already gone to Chicago, and I thought Pay would be better than taking Terrace Marshall Jr., the wide receiver from LSU. I thought about a corner, but I also had Horn off the board by then, so I went with the pass rusher at 23. But corner, pass rusher, there's an offensive tackle at Stanford by the name of Walker Little, played left tackle, was injured in 2019 in the first game, did not play last year. He's going to be in the mix. The Christian Darrisaw, an offensive lineman from Virginia Tech, played left tackle, could be a right tackle, though, in the NFL, but I would say those would be the positions for me, either wide receiver, tight end, no, if they get Pitts. If they didn't take Pitts, it's a little high for Pat Freiermuth from Penn State. I have a solid second-round grade on him. So I would say if you get Pitts, you would go wide receiver, you would go pass rusher or corner.
Mel, a couple more real quick. Giants, you've got them at Jalen Waddle at number 11. When you look at the Giants, is that number one wide receiver the absolute biggest need they have?
I think it is. I think everybody's pass rushers. We know that, Chris, and certainly the cornerback position and the O-line. We know about that situation's got to come together, and Thomas has to get better. But we know all those things that are going on with regard to their team as they have it. If you say, okay, what can Jalen Waddle mean to that team? He can mean an awful lot. To me, there's not much, Chris, separating him from Ja'Marr Chase and also a guy like Devontae Smith. If you look at that team going into the year, Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle were kind of 1 and 1A. And the only thing that prevented Jalen Waddle from being up there right now with Devontae Smith and Ja'Marr Chase is the ankle injury. But he got back for the championship game, even limping. He caught three balls, one of which was on third down, key play. This kid is a great punt returner. He's going to help you in terms of your field position. Like I said, we know Andrew Thomas and that offensive line have to ask to get better. But if I'm the Giants, I'm looking at strongly at Jalen Waddle at 11. If he's there, and there's no guarantee he will be there because, like I said, he's a dynamic performer, great competitor. But if he's there at 11, I think you would write it in pen. Now, would you trade up from 11 a couple spots to get him? Maybe. If you stay at 11, you may lose him. So that's going to be something to watch very closely as to whether the Giants can get him at 11 or maybe, like I say, he's off the board a couple picks earlier.
You know, you mentioned Trey Lance and the fact that he's only played one game earlier. You called him the most fascinating player that you've had to try to evaluate in quite some time. Why is that, Mel? I mean, is it just the fact that we haven't seen him enough?
Well, it's 1AA, okay? So you think about 1AA players, normally you get a pretty good body of work because, you know, they're usually going to stay majority of their career. They're usually playing early on, or they had a couple years at the JUCO ranks, and then they come in and do their thing. He was at North Dakota State with one start this year. That's it, October 3rd, against Central Arkansas. It was 15-30 with an interception. Last year, he played really well, 16 starts, but he had five games where he was below 56%. 56.5. He had 15 to 17 starts in his career where he was 23 pass attempts or fewer. Some guys have 23 pass attempts in a quarter. Yeah. He only had 23 pass attempts or fewer and 15 to 17 starts. He's only 20 years of age, arguably the youngest player in this draft. So when you talk about level of competition, 17 starts, only one start this past year. I mentioned the fact that his accuracy needs to improve just a little bit. That makes him one of those guys you roll the dice on. If you're talking top 10 of the draft, you're rolling the dice there that he's going to fulfill that potential. I will say this, Chris, had he gone back to North Dakota State or done what I thought, maybe transfer to Texas or transfer to Ohio State and play in 2021 there, he would have done that and played well. He would have been the number one pick guaranteed in 2022. So you can, I guess if you want to spin it that he could be a bargain at 9, 10, 11, 12, you can maybe spin it that way. If you say, hey, had he gone back, he might have went number one. We're getting him at 9, 10, 11, and 12 because he only played one game. He didn't even play great in that one game.
Perhaps your most important evaluation this week in your column, the fact that you have said absolutely not to pineapple on pizza, Mel. Please expound on your thoughts.
No, I'm not a cheese. I take the cheese off most of it. I'll leave some. And then I'm a big mashed potatoes with pizza person. So I love mashed potatoes.
Really?
With the pizza. Yeah, I love mashed potatoes with pizza. And I only like pineapple and pineapple upside down cake. And when I hear think pineapple, I think pineapple upside down cake only, or a pineapple crush or something like that. I love an orange crush that was developed here in Ocean City, down here near Kent Island where I live. And so I would say whether it's a pineapple crush, orange crush, whatever it may be, but for pineapple, it would be a pineapple upside down cake only with, like I say, pizza. No, I'm pizza without the cheese with mashed potatoes.
I am absolutely stunned at pizza with mashed potatoes, Mel. How did that develop?
Good.
How did you make that happen? Were you a kid? Where did that come from? I wouldn't even think of
it. It came, I think, be it with ESPN. When you're up there, you're trying to get everything quick because you're in between, you're doing SportsCenter and NFL Live and all the things you're taping. And I remember just combining the two, and I said, man, this really works. Pizza with mashed potatoes got it done, Chris. It just clicked, is what I guess it would say. It was they don't pick the click, as they used to say. So I think that would be my pick the click is mashed potatoes. Like Ken, the Hawk Harrelson used to say, is pick the click. So that was my best. The go-to dinner was pizza with mashed potatoes, and then maybe a little pineapple upside-down cake for dessert.
All right, well, then what's the dessert with the most upside, Mel?
Oh, boy, that pumpkin pie. I'm a big pumpkin pie fan with the fat-free whipped cream. Love that, but I'll tell you what, though, Chris. Pineapple upside-down cake is not far behind. Or I like a good coffee cake.
Who wins a fight between a bear and a shark?
I don't want to run into either one. How's that? I don't want to run into either one.
You can't go 1A here, Mel. You can't go 1A like it's the draft.
I think I might have to. I'll just say avoid the best you can. I respect them, but avoid them. How's that?
Even on a neutral site.
Anywhere, anytime, I'm going to stay away.
Mel Kiper Jr., awesome stuff. Appreciate it so much.
Thanks, Chris. You have a great time. Thanks, bud.